Hi, and welcome to Real Nurse Stories. Today, I'm thrilled to be able to interview Teresa Sanderson, who is over in the US in Kansas. And I'm excited to interview Teresa because I know she's doing lots of great things. So I'm not going to share any more than that. I'm going to let Teresa tell her own story. So welcome, Teresa, to Real Nurse Stories. And I'm really thrilled to invite you here today.
Oh my gosh, Eva, I am so excited to be here with you and with this community that you've created, sharing real nurse stories. Thank you so much for having me.
Ah, you're welcome. You're welcome, Teresa. So I'm going to jump straight in here, Teresa, and I would like to ask you really go right back to the very beginning of your nursing career. And I'm really interested to know, what led you into nursing in the first place?
Oh my, we are going to go back a few years. You know, interestingly enough, nursing was not my first career choice. My first career choice was music, and I am a vocal major and trained in music theory and composition. And so my idea of a career was I'm going to go into commercial music. I'm going to, you know, sing for ads. I'm going to do, you know, whatever I do, but I'm going to be paid for singing was my idea of fun. And when I was midway in that college degree, I met a man, we got married, I had my first child, you know, and life goes on, right? And so here I was with a half completed music degree and really no way to earn any income from that. But blessed to be in an area, and I was living in Texas at the time. So, but blessed to be in that area where I was 30 minutes away from one of the best nursing schools in the state. And it was a community college program, but it was well renowned. And over time, I just, you know, when you get married and have a child, life becomes practical. It becomes about practical things like earning a living and being able to contribute and do what works for your family. And so that is what led me into nursing. Prior to that, I was never a science kind of person. I never felt like I really did my best in that area. I've always been more creative, more artsy. But once I graduated from nursing, it was very serendipitous, and I fell in love with the field of nursing, the practice of nursing, the work of nursing at the bedside. And so it was just, it ended up being just, you know, truly, I believe, what I was intended for. So
yeah. Ah, that's really interesting. And I'm curious to ask you, do you use the music training that you've had in how have you used that in your career?
Oh gosh, I love that question. And you know, I was able to do simple things with my music, for instance, singing in church and things like that, that though I waited, you know, probably 20 years to start doing, but then I got started in that. And then I got into hospice nursing and I began singing at funerals and of my patients many times. And then I actually began singing with my patients. And that is, I think, one of the things that I really enjoy. And my mom right now has Alzheimer's, and I saw her within the last couple of weeks, and it was just wonderful to sing with her some of the old hymns from church that are her very favorites. And to see her be able to pull up those memories and sing with me was just absolutely beautiful. So I do use it in what I do now.
Mm-hmm. I find that fascinating, as so many nurses that I talk to are really creative people as well as being fabulous nurses. And, you know, they're not always using those creative skills in kind of the work that they do in nursing. And I love that you talk about singing with patients, because as you will know, there's so much research around the benefits of that, particularly with people who have dementia and Alzheimer's. And you know, I just think it's another aspect to nursing, isn't it, that people don't necessarily, well, they wouldn't necessarily think that, but it's another skill that actually makes a really positive contribution to patient care. And I just love that, because I think it's for patients. It's something that's actually really calming, and just, you know, it's another way of caring for somebody, isn't it? It's another medium of caring. That's what I'm trying to say. And
I definitely agree. And I think too, another way of connecting on a different level, you know, not just about your physical needs, but about, you know, real human connection and that smile and that singing when you sing together. It's almost, you know, I realized, gosh, probably 10, 15 years ago when I was working in hospice that, you know, I come to the bedside with all that I am, you know, that's the beauty of holistic nursing, right? And I come to the bedside with all that I am, and it's okay to be vulnerable and share, you know, that part of me, because, you know, our patients are vulnerable. And so I think when we can share something that is outside the box and, you know, maybe give a little joy, then that's really pretty cool.
And I think for many nurses listening to that, particularly younger nurses, I think that's something that people often struggle with when they're working with patients who are, you know, end of life or, you know, palliative care. It's something that I think particularly newly qualified nurses struggle with, how you deal with that. If I go back to my own training, which was a long time ago now, but I distinctly remember being told, you don't ever show your emotions as a nurse. And I really struggled with that. I was terrible at trying to put the lid on my emotions. It just didn't work for me.
Me either.
No. And yet, you know, the times when you do show your emotions, I found were the times that patients actually valued that, because you're sitting in that space and you're able to not put yourself in their shoes wholeheartedly in terms of understanding their experience, but it's another way of connecting and being vulnerable with somebody that's hugely important, I think. So I love that phrase, you know, that you bring all that I am, because I don't think you can be a nurse unless you're bringing all that you are in that sense, you know.
I love that. Yes. And I think, you know, so true. And I've often said, you know, when interviewing nurses for, whether it was my hospice team or any place else that I work, I mean, I don't want that nurse on my staff who cannot fall in love with the patient. I don't need that. You know, technical skills are truly a dime a dozen. I can train you on anything clinical, anything technical, you know, but I can't teach you compassion. No. I can't teach you to connect with people, you know, and there is no harm in shedding those tears. And I was trained the same way. You don't show it. You don't get it. You don't get personal. Well, I would never want, again, thinking about my own parents, I would not want anybody who wouldn't shed a tear when they passed or when they had a hard time, you know, caring for them. That's just not human. No. That's not human nature. So
No. Yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it, when you think back to that. I mean, thankfully, a lot has changed in training, and that's not something that is encouraged anymore. But it makes me think about a generation. You know, if you adopted that message wholeheartedly, you know, I think that creates this internal struggle when you're having to deal with situations that are or require you to be empathetic and to show emotion when you have been trained not to do that, and maybe have taken that message and carried that message in your career. That's also very difficult on a personal level, and I think almost sets you up for your own kind of struggles with stress that are work related.
I think you're, yeah, that is so important, so true.
Yeah. Teresa, I know that you've had a really interesting kind of career, and we've just talked about how you came to be a nurse, but I'm really curious to know a little bit more about kind of the things, some of the things that you've done in your career. You've mentioned that you worked in a hospice, and I just invite you just to share a little bit more about kind of the things that you've done and what you're doing currently.
Okay. When I was a new grad nurse, the very first thing that I did coming out of nursing school was work on a postpartum OB-GYN hospital unit, which I absolutely loved, working the postpartum piece. That was so fun, moms and new babies and oh my gosh, all of that. But the women's health side was also fun, to be an encourager for those women who had, you know, hysterectomies and various surgeries. So that was my first start. And I've also done in my career a lot of home care, a lot of hospice, and a lot of med-surg nursing. One of the things in my career that I really struggled with early on for that was the idea that I consider myself a really good med surge nurse.
Yeah.
That is my niche. If I'm going to be working in a unit, I can get that patient from point A to point B in their health goals, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm not the ICU nurse. I'm not the ER nurse. I don't want a gunshot rolling in off the street, you know, and me being the first one, you know, to start work. That is not my strength, not my forte. And early in my career, I felt so less than as a nurse, because I wasn't comfortable necessarily working those areas. Mm-hmm. Over the three decades plus that I've been a nurse, I now recognize that, you know, we're all blessed with unique gifts and talents, and it takes all of us to meet the needs of all of the patients. And so I now embrace that this is the nurse that I am. And you know, anybody else can, if that's your thing, then by golly, you serve in those other fast paced, you know, more aggressive accident or emergent areas. And I'll take the lead over here because a big part of my personality is nurturing, right? Yeah. So I am the hand holder. I am the one who can listen. I am the one who can provide probably extra support and extra education and things like that. And that really is what I enjoyed so much about home care and hospice. Yeah. When I can help the patient and family get where they need to be with healthcare in their home setting, I really feel good about that. I really feel good about demystifying the very complex healthcare system, helping them navigate through things they've never done before. And really being that patient advocate. That's, you know, what I love. So, of course, that led into my husband and I starting our own hospice agency in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And we owned and operated that for a good 10 years, served more patients than we ever dreamed. And it was that experience that our story there is, or my story, I guess, is that we grew the hospice to 3 million. From just a $6,000 investment. We started on less than a shoestring budget. We started that hospice and grew it to $3 million in annual revenue using just nursing continuing education as a vehicle for marketing. And so now when you talk about what I'm doing now, I am teaching nurse entrepreneurs how to do the same thing with their businesses, how to use nursing continuing education in a very powerful way to get your marketing messages across to nurses in the healthcare industry so that we can serve them, whether we're helping nurses with burnout or wellness or healing, or we have a nurse-owned business that patients can benefit from.
Yeah.
Nursing, continuing ed is the way to get in front of that audience and empower them
yeah.
to take the next right step. So yeah. That's what I spend my time doing these days.
I love that. I love that because you're connecting the marketing to what nurses are really good at. So I think that's yes. a fabulous way of, you know, in a world where we're bombarded with everything marketing and how to do it. And it drives me mad sometimes when you look at social media, you know, the
Indeed.
Latest.
Yeah.
But I love that. I think that's a really powerful message in terms of connecting your nursing skills and using that really to market yourself through education is fantastic. I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa, I just want to explore a little bit more with you about the work that you did in a hospice, because you did reference in your questionnaire that you struggled with that work in terms of personal struggles.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm interested just to hear a little bit more so that, you know, we can share some of what you learned from that experience with other nurses.
Sure. I am anymore, I feel truly blessed and honored to be able to share my experience of major depression. There was a time when I wanted total anonymity and I wanted no one to know that I had such a thing, because as the owner of the largest hospice in our small rural area, my biggest struggle after owning that hospice for 10 years was the hundreds of lives that had sifted through my fingers. You know, it felt like sand through an hourglass. So many patients, families, caregivers. And so literally I woke up, well, I didn't really wake up, that I just couldn't get out of bed. I just couldn't get out of bed anymore. And so my husband, who was my business partner, would call other staff members to cover for my duties that day, because I might not get out of bed until noon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And and this was the first, really, when it hit me, when major depression came calling, it hit me hard. And it was almost instantaneous that I was pretty much immobile, is what I called it. Not able to act, not really able to do all the things I knew needed to be done.
Yeah.
And so from there, you know, we sought treatment, but I insisted on treatment 90 miles away so that I could have total anonymity. And so Greg would drive me an hour and a half each way to my psychiatrist and counseling appointments 3 times a week. I mean, he was just a gem. But my mind was thinking that if the local medical community finds out this has happened to me, I will not have any credibility at all in the medical community. And to that point, I had been the beacon of hospice and end of life care. People had called me the face of hospice. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified of what would happen if people knew. And, one of the biggest lessons, though, I learned during that time was how painfully slow the healing process can be for people with mental illness. Mm-hmm. You know, the expectation that you can start on an antidepressant today and 6 weeks from now, you might begin to feel an impact from that medication is so wrong. That is so wrong on so many levels, because it's so painful to wait. And I never dreamed I would ever experience such a thing. I'm grateful that I had the experience, because I think for every painful experience I've ever had in my life, it translates into for me back into the way I can come to the table with more compassion for my patients. But I know that was the very first really hard thing, was just knowing that there's no easy way out. This is going to be hard and long, and let's hope and pray for the best, because I spent weeks on the couch crying. Didn't really know why. Sometimes I would just start crying and I'd go and journal for a while, and I would just weep my eyes out while I was journaling. And I couldn't visit my family. I had a lot of people second guessing. And those were my family members who were saying, you know, have you had this checked? Have you had that checked? Have you? And I was just like, you know, I don't have the strength, you know, to answer all of these questions, number one, but it was all, there was a lot of second guessing by my family on my diagnosis. Did I really have depression?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is also painful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because as a nurse, yes, I've done the due diligence. I know what's going on with me. I know the truth of me. And whether or not you want to accept that is really not for me to worry about. So I literally asked my husband to be the communication point for me, because again, this is all about self-care, right?
Yeah.
So I had to provide some immediate boundaries for myself. And I asked him to be on the point for sharing updates with my family for me. And I asked my brother to be on the point of my family. Yeah. And so any questions and all questions to come in for Greg needed to come from him, because Greg didn't have time to take questions from everybody in the family, you know?
Yeah.
So I set up a little system, and it just allowed me to step back and have the peace I needed to heal. I also let go of some things that I really coveted. You know, at the time I was on the National Hospice and Palliative Care Steering Committee in the United States. But I resigned from that committee and several other committees because I just needed to take care of me. And that was the short list, was get rid of anything that is not necessary. And so it was a very, what can I say, humbling, incredibly humbling process to go through and just shed all of these things that I had really valued and that I felt made me the person that I was, right? But I think the real truth, Eva, was that I discovered in that time of depression that I had no identity outside of being a nurse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was terrifying. Yeah. That was really scary to figure out, okay, so if I'm stripped of my title, if I'm stripped of my credential, if I don't have these committees, if I don't have, you know, all these things that other people say about me, who really am I?
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, that was, you know, I never realized that was happening to me during the course of being a nurse. And I think probably a lot of nurses are there because people say, yeah, I'm a nurse, it's in my blood. Well, be careful with that. Be very careful. I've been there, been there, done that. There was no t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I clawed my way back to recovery. And I do say clawing because therapy and counseling is not for the faint of heart. You know, I do think that being a nurse helped me understand the importance of complying with my medication regimen, with my counseling regimen, even when I didn't want to, even when it was too hard, even when I absolutely hated it. And I hate, you know, I feel terrible even saying that, but it's hard. You know, I told my husband once, I said, you know, going to therapy is like, in nursing, I equate it to heavy wound care. You know, you have this massive bandage, let's say, on somebody's leg for a big gaping wound, and it's wrapped with cling gauze and all of these things, but we have to undress it. We have to change that dressing. And that's what therapy is like. It's like changing the dressing, where you unwrap that gauze and the gauze pad that's in the wound is going to be stuck.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be stuck. So we're going to wet it a little bit, but it's going to be painful to pull it off. And then once we pull it off, we're going to look at it. You know, how does it look today? How's everything doing in there? And then based on, and that's what therapy is like. It's pulling everything off and looking at this painful, ugly thing and then saying, okay, that's where it is today, and covering it back up gently and rewrapping it until you go back next time.
Yeah.
Wowza.
I love that analogy, Teresa, because there's so much in what you just said there. And I think the first thing I want to say is, as nurses, you know, I think do take that mantle on. And I've heard people talk about, you know, the dedication part of being a nurse. And I think what you've described there is we take on that mantle but we take it on at a huge personal cost. And
yeah,
as I'm sure, you know, you will be aware, so many nurses don't realize what they're doing in terms of taking that on for themselves. They're storing up further down the line.
Right.
And I think the second thing I take away from what you've said there was the whole nurses don't make good patients, because we don't. We absolutely don't, you know. And when it comes to ourselves, and particularly, you know, we can laugh about it, but I really, you know, recognize that it's such a difficult personal experience to have gone through that. And I want to say that there's a certain amount of stigma still in the profession, mm-hmm. not just in nursing.
Oh yeah.
In medicine, mm-hmm. in the allied health professions.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that whole not feeling that you can be allowed to say, hey, I'm really struggling here, you know, I'm experiencing mm-hmm. all of these feelings, I don't know what to do with them. I'm still, you know, that's the sadness, that I think we're still pushing that underground, trying to keep mm-hmm. a lid on our emotions, not acknowledging this is tough. Being a nurse is yeah. tough. Being a doctor is tough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And particularly, you know, if I come back to the where you were working, so you were working in the hospice setting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we know about that is, you know, as highly empathetic people who are nurturers, mm-hmm. we soak up other people's energy, sure. mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
and particularly in end of life care. It happens a lot in trauma as well, where you're seeing a lot of traumatic things on a regular basis. You are absorbing all of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, with hindsight, Teresa, kind of looking back with wisdom, if you like, and understanding mm-hmm. of your situation, what could you have done differently, do you think, that might have helped you in terms of what you experienced?
Well, I think what I would have done differently, I mean, hindsight is indeed 2020. And so I would have made my self-care a priority, as I do today. This is the reason I stay in entrepreneurship, is because no one can take better care of me than me. And so when I create my own schedule and do my own thing, I am at my best. But as the CEO of my own hospice, okay, I didn't know what I didn't know. Yeah. About self-care. I didn't know all of the things that I didn't know. And so I didn't do things like just pack a lunch. I didn't regularly take my lunch break, probably. I worked long hours. I was on call behind everybody. And I would have created systems to be sure that I had true downtime and that everybody on the team had true downtime. Mm-hmm. I did my best for the team, by the way.
Yes.
They had more downtime than I did, for sure.
Yeah.
And so, but that's another part of it though, isn't it? And so I would have made sure that I had the equivalent of what they had. Whereas I always felt it was my responsibility, as it is, you know, the responsibility of the employer to provide that. But you just can't leave yourself out of the equation, and I wouldn't do that again.
No. And I think, you know, it's so true, as a leader, senior leader, you spend a lot of time, particularly if we're high nurturing people, we tend to run around making sure everyone else is all right, and we leave mm-hmm. ourselves we leave ourselves last, and we laugh because we know we do it, you know, we've all done it, I've done it. But it's so true. You can't afford to leave yourself last in a profession that demands a lot of you emotionally. I think it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's one of the mistakes that we all make, and we have all made. And mm-hmm. I love the fact that, you know, I spend a lot of time talking about self-care, and it's often, and I always say this to people, Teresa, it's the small practical things. It's not the big expensive spa days, spending a lot of money. Yeah. It is the, how do I look after me on a day-to-day basis?
Daily practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even down to remembering to pack your own lunch, because actually, you know, nutrition, nourishing food is part of your self-care. And I just love that you, you know, you give that really practical example, because it is those small, small things that if you do them regularly, doesn't stop you experiencing some of the things that you experience, but it helps you to be in a better place, I think, on an emotional kind of all levels, really, physical level, all of those things through those small actions.
I have to agree with that. And I also, you know, one of the things, I've done some travel nursing and different things since my recovery, again, feeling just really blessed to be able to, you know, go work at one of the university hospitals in Kansas City and run with the young pups, as I say, and still be able to do it. But at the same time, you know, I came prepared with my lunch. I had so many bottles of water that I would carry with me every day. And I always took a lunch break. Always. Yeah. I remember seeing a young nurse when I was traveling. She was a new grad and had just gotten started. And at the end of our 12-hour shift, she was looking at me with a very smug smile. And she said, "I didn't even get a lunch today." And she was very proud of it. And I thought, oh, honey, you need to take your lunch every single day. And especially on those days when you even don't feel like you have time to take a lunch, those are the days you really need to take a lunch, because when you don't take a break, you're going to be prone to making mistakes and errors and so many other things, right? And that we just don't think about. We just think, I need to keep going.
I have a saying around that. I call it we wear the overworking badge with pride. It's that whole, you know, I've picked up all these extra shifts. I've worked all day without a lunch break. And it's like, no. That's not, not helping you, you know. We're doing that to ourselves. It's not a good, not a good thing. Not.
These days I want the badge that says I spent time with my grandkids.
Yes.
You know, I had dinner with my husband without distractions. I had, you know, those are the badges I want to wear.
And I'm also curious, Teresa, about the work that you're doing as an entrepreneur, because I know in this post-pandemic world, a lot of nurses, certainly I'm seeing a lot more nurses who are moving into becoming nurse entrepreneurs and, you know, might still have a foot in being a nurse, hands-on clinical nurse, but are also looking at developing. And I think that's changing. Nursing is changing. People are wanting different things. And I'm curious to know, you know, what your kind of take on that is, being a nursepreneur, entrepreneur, and you're working with kind of education as a way of marketing. And I'm just interested to know a little bit more about that.
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, I'm in full agreement. The landscape in nursing is forever changed. You know, we can never, that genie is not going back in the bottle, you know, and,
and
nurses right now do want more. I think we've wanted more for 30 years ever since I became a nurse, and long before that, I'm sure. And it's not too much to ask. It's not too much to ask that we can have a career and also have balance in our lives that allows us to be free to spend time with our families and our loved ones, not miss our children's events, and take care of ourselves. So I think right now nurses are at a point where people are listening. Number one, leaders are listening, but it's vital for all of us as nurses to speak up and make our needs known and our voices heard. What I'm hearing from nurses is that they want they want flexibility, they want balance, they want some control of their schedules, they want meaningful wages, they want to know that they can earn what they're worth and not be included necessarily in room and board charges, yeah, as has typically been the United States healthcare model.
Yeah.
So, but I think things are in place for some radical changes to happen in the profession of nursing. And for me, that's exciting. There are some things about it that are scary. You know, for instance, in 2022, what was it, 37, 38% of nurses were saying they wanted to leave the bedside, yeah, or maybe the profession altogether.
Yeah.
So that piece of it is definitely scary, but I think the burden is on traditional healthcare facilities and traditional healthcare providers to start thinking outside of the box of how can we employ nurses on nursing, on nurses' terms,
yeah,
more,
yeah,
and not be so, oh, I don't want to say bottom line driven, because I know and understand business as an entrepreneur. I know there needs to be profit, but yeah, it cannot come at the expense of the nursing profession, yeah, or the individual nurse.
Yeah.
So I think some good things are going to be coming. It's not going to be without its challenges, that's for sure. But I also think the time is right for nurse entrepreneurs to look at what opportunities they have to offer nurses who want to leave the bedside. Because if there is a way for nurses to continue to serve nurses and nursing as, yes, entrepreneurs, then by golly, let's keep them in the profession. Yeah. Let's keep, yeah, them in the industry and let them do something that's going to work better for them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely, yeah, agree with that. 100%. It's like, yep, you know, things have to change. We can't continue to operate the way things have always been. And, it, you know, change on the level that we've seen, as difficult as the pandemic was, you know, brings opportunities actually. And that's really what we're talking about here for nursing. There is a massive opportunity to almost say, you know, what went before is not what we're wanting. There's opportunities, yeah, for something different, for a different model. And that's a good thing. A good thing.
Agreed. 100%. 100%. Yeah.
Teresa, can I ask you a little bit about your involvement with Feeding the Young? Because I you know, I'm passionate about this. It's what I love about this. Nurses might have heard about, there's an article written quite a while ago now about, I think the title was When Nurses Eat Their Young, and it didn't paint a particularly good picture of what happens in the culture of the nursing profession and how we give our young grads a bit of a hard time and a baptism of fire. And I love how you've turned this phrase around to feeding their young, and I just would love you to share, you know, more about this so that people can hear about the great work that's going on.
Oh gosh, thank you so very much for that. So yeah, as a student nurse, I experienced nurses eating their young for the very first time before, yeah, I even graduated nursing school. And so I just think it's just a terrible phenomenon that happens to fresh new grad nurses who come to the workforce excited. You know, they're excited to serve, excited to learn, and they come to their preceptor who is a veteran nurse who's exhausted, been waiting for this new grad for years, you know, to land on their, yeah, unit. And so the precepting nurse, you know, rolls their eyes when they're asked questions, and they sigh with frustration when they're asked to show the new grad how to do something, or it takes a little bit of time. And so the nurturing is just not there. And it's a terrible, terrible hazing environment. And it happens so many different ways. But it's basically just an incivility toward one another. It's incivility, and in my opinion, just total unprofessionalism that has been tolerated in our profession for far too long.
Yeah.
So That said, I want to make it clear that nurses eating their young not only happens to new graduate nurses, it also happens to veteran nurses when they get floated to a unit they've never worked on before. Mm-hmm. They're there to help out and they come with their 20 years of experience, but sorry, I've never worked OB before.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I may have a few questions about where things are and what do you normally do? But no, I'm met with the same resistance. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm here to help, you know, figure it out, you know, and the common phrases that are frequently told, you know, as a new grad nurse, I would ask, well, why do we do this way? You know?
Yeah.
And the typical thing I got was because this is the way we've always done it.
Oh God, if we had a dollar for every time somebody had
exactly this is the way we've always, so whether it makes sense or not,
yeah,
we're going to continue to do it this way. All righty then. So there's that, and then there's, you know, just the idea that, you know, can you show me how to do this? I've never done this before. Mm. Nobody showed me how to do it, why should I show you?
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we're talking about lives in the balance, right? Patient yeah. lives yeah. in the balance. And, you know, so many things in nursing are time sensitive.
Yes.
You know, whether it's a lab draw that we're doing or a med that needs to be given or an IV that needs to be started. And if we can't support each other, you know, on the end user is the poor patient yeah. in the bed
yeah.
waiting for some help. And, you know, we can't give each other the courtesy to give each other answers. So, this has just been around for far too long. And in my opinion, it is the job of leadership to yeah. provide, okay, positive, nurturing, professional work environments.
Yes.
And if leadership is not doing that, first of all, I say shame on you.
Yeah.
Shame yeah. on you for putting up with this and allowing it to continue. And we have to set the bar higher.
Yeah.
We have to set it higher. I don't know how many nurses I've ever talked with or worked with, and I've said it myself, but all these people would say to me, I'd rather work short than work with somebody like that.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that too. I can get yeah. more done
yeah.
without somebody like that on the unit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's just, there are so many things that we have just settled for in mm-hmm. nursing. And because, you know, trust me, I know as a business owner, nurse manager, I know it's hard to get time off. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I've been there, done that. I've told that story. But you know what? Somebody has to set the stage for it to improve. Somebody has to do that. And who better than leadership, right? That's yeah. what you're hired for. Yeah. And your staff will tell you that's why you make the big bucks. So
that's true.
So step up, do the thing. What I have always found in leadership is that, and I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent
Sorry.
Here, but, and I am probably, I'll be the first to say I'm pretty tough-nosed when it comes to leadership and what will go and won't go in a work environment. But when we're placed in a nursing leadership role, if you're coming into a DON role or something like that, it's never because, well, 99.9999 times, it's not because there's a well-oiled machine somebody is retiring from, right? Yeah. And they've left everything perfect for you. No, it's never.
Nope.
It's never that way. So, you know, when you come in as a new leader, it's important to set those new expectations yeah. of how things are going to go. And then, you know, you follow through with consistency on whether it's discipline or counseling or whatever needs to happen to improve what's going on. It's hard to make changes, but you have to be ready to do that as a leader.
Yeah.
So today what I'm doing is Nurses Feed Their Young. This is a global movement. It's really exciting because within the first 2 weeks, I think, of launching the movement last year, we had global attention, and that's how I connected with you, Eva.
So yeah, this is that's just, right.
It's just wonderful. I can flash that logo anywhere, and nurses around the world are saying, I don't know what that is, but I need that.
Yes.
I yeah. need that.
Yeah.
And so Nurses Feed Their Young, our mission is, to infuse emotional intelligence into the everyday skill set of nurses and nursing leaders so we can improve nursing retention decrease stress and burnout, and improve the patient experience. Mm. Again, it's all focused on that poor patient at the end of the line, right?
Yeah.
It's also focused on the nurses. When I understand and know emotional intelligence, I can come to the table. I can come to work in the morning and somebody might confront me with a less than positive attitude. Mm-hmm. And I'm emotionally intelligent enough to know that, number one, maybe this isn't that person's ordinary behavior, right?
Yes.
Maybe something happened at this person's home and they're having a bad day.
Yeah.
And I know as an emotionally intelligent person that I don't have to respond in the same way to that person, right? I can truly be the bigger guy because I have learned to do that. And together we can create a positive work environment, because what is happening is, with the nursing shortage since the pandemic and long before, right? I mean, if we're gonna be truthful, we've had a nursing shortage forever. Mm. But my struggle is that I've seen this since I became a new nurse, is that we continue to recruit new nurses into the same toxic work environments and we expect them to somehow stay.
Yes.
It's time to look at new solutions to old problems, because this will never go away until we solve nursing culture and nursing work environment. Yeah. And those are the two systems that, you know, nobody's really willing to look at, because they are, I recognize it's a big onion to peel.
Yeah.
There's a lot to unwrap
in
decades of negative nursing culture. I mean, we've developed a kind of generational dysfunction, you know, that we pass down, right? That like what families pass down, we do that in nursing because we bring on a new nurse and we treat them poorly. So that nurse now knows, okay, this is how I was trained. I'm going to train the next nurse that way and the next nurse that way. And so we've created this terrible thing.
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know how we've gotten by, limped along, you know, like this for all these years, but nurses deserve better. Mm-hmm. And I think if I love anything most about the Nurses Feed Their Young movement, it's about what we as individual nurses can do differently ourselves, without having to wait for the approval of administration, without having to wait for, you know, our nursing leader to say, hey, it's okay for you to go ahead and do that. We can choose to learn emotional intelligence today and implement it tomorrow when we show up on the work unit. Mm. And the benefits of that, to me personally, are going to be decreased stress, decreased anxiety, decreased risk of depression. You know, all of these wonderful things happen because of a choice I personally choose to make, right? It doesn't matter what anybody else does.
No.
When I choose to do this for me, I could learn today and implement tomorrow.
Yeah. And I love that, because, you know, you hear that. I hear that so many times. The default is, oh, well, that's the way it's always been. It's a system issue. It's this, it's that. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. We need to own our own bad behaviors. And there are plenty of them. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about people leaving the profession, you know, grad nurses. I've had recent experience of grad nurses who literally land their first job and they're thinking of leaving within 3-4 months, because they're literally, it's the culture that's driving them out. And it's terrible. It's like, we can't afford to lose good nurses. What, we can't, you know, it doesn't matter which way you cut it.
Yeah.
Aging population, we need nurses. We will always need nurses. Right. We have a responsibility to do something about it. We can't sit on the sidelines really any longer. And I
agree.
You know, to be able to have that mindset of, you know, I'm bringing my whole self to work. I'm aware of my own responsibilities. I'm emotionally intelligent. That is, you know, such a powerful message, Teresa, really. You know, and one the world needs to hear. And I'm, you know, I love the fact that this is a global movement. I really do, because it's so needed. It doesn't matter where in the world you work. I think all nurses can relate to what we're talking about here. I certainly can from working in the UK, from working in Australia. I certainly have experienced and heard of people's experiences. So hugely important work. And I'm really curious to know, you know, how far this program has reached in terms of other countries. Have you had a lot of interest from other countries outside of the US?
Yes, we have had interest from, of course, Australia. We've had interest from South Africa, England, India. I've had some nurses in India, the Bahamas. And this was just, you know, right at, as soon as we launched. And so we had all of these inquiries coming in, and I just thought, how wonderful is that? And I actually have a couple of opportunities to speak this year for the World Nursing Conference.
Great.
On Nurses Feed Their Young. So I'm really excited about that, to bring that to the table.
I was just going to say to you, there needs to be a conference. I can see a conference with this, you know. I'm seriously Nurses Feed Their Young. I tell you, it would be, people would love that. It would just be, but I guess the challenge there is, you know, yes, there's interest. The question becomes, so how are you going to make a difference with that knowledge? What are you going to take back to the workplace and implement that actually changes or begins to change? And we know, you will know, Teresa, that culture is one of the hardest things in change management, but it starts with one person.
It starts with one.
You know, the power of one multiplied is a very powerful force to be reckoned with. And I have no doubt that this will change a lot of things in nursing for the better. And I just want to say thank you to you, because from one nurse to another, you know, to put your hat in the ring and hold the mirror up and say, it's not good, this is not acceptable anymore, you know, that's a really positive, for me, statement that, you know, we need to hear as a profession. We actually need to own this, and we need to start to drive change. And you have started that conversation in terms of what you're trying to do. And, you know, there's so many opportunities, Teresa, with this. It's just a fabulous, fabulous movement, I think. And I want to say, you know, people listening, how can they get involved with this? If people are, you know, jumping up and down as I was, thinking, I want to be involved in this. This is great. How do they, you know, how do they get involved?
I love that. I love it. Thank you for asking. The easiest way to learn about what's going on with Nurses Feed Their Young is to visit our website, and you can literally just type in nursesfeedtheiryoung.com. It's actually a page on my website, but when you type it in that way, you'll go to the right place, and you have opportunities to explore what are the opportunities there, because right now we need coaches and trainers for Nurses Feed Their Young to help me bring this movement around the world to where it's needed. So there are entrepreneurial opportunities within Nurses Feed Their Young for nurses who are interested to be trained and learned how to teach the emotional intelligence piece of this to nurses. And so I stand behind that, because earlier I said, you know, we need entrepreneurial opportunities for those nurses who do want to leave the bedside. And so this is one of those. If being at the bedside is no longer working for you, then this may be something that could help you and your family. The other role that you can learn about is how to become an empowered champion. And empowered champions in the Nurses Feed Their Young unit are those who have gone through our 12-week training circuit and who know how to show up, you know, emotionally intelligent on their units. And so there's that. And then also there's just the highly valuable role of a what I call a nifty supporter. Nurses Feed Their Young is nifty. And so you can be a nifty supporter just by sharing one of our social posts or sharing our website page, you know, with your network. All of that is so helpful.
Yeah.
So yeah, check out the website. You can send us a message. You'll be communicating with me directly, and I am happy, happy, happy to chat with you.
That's great. Thank you, Teresa.
Of course.
Now I have two, because I know that we've nearly run out of time. So two last things, quick questions, I promise, that I'd like to ask you. The first question would be, knowing what you know now, the sum total of everything that you've been through and experienced, what would you go back and say to a nurse who was maybe just starting out in her career? What advice would you give to that young nurse, or not necessarily young nurse, a nurse starting out in her career?
Probably two things. Mm-hmm. The first would be take care of yourself. And the second would be give yourself at least 6 weeks when you start a new position to learn the ropes, to be able to leave on time, to just all those little things, you know. Give yourself 6 weeks to hone in on everything you need to understand to just do base, you know, function and get in on time, get out on time, that kind of thing. And from there, it only gets better. But if you give yourself some grace to just not expect everything to go perfectly the first day in, you're going to be a lot better off and you're going to feel better and be able to see improvement in yourself and your performance.
Well, I love that. That's great advice. It is, because that's often people, we often very hard on ourselves when we start a new job in terms of the expectations. And I think to look at it through that lens of being kind to yourself in the first 6 weeks and having those boundaries is great advice.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And then the last question that I always like to ask people is, kind of a little bit of a reflection really on your career as a whole, but what would you most like to be remembered for in your nursing career, Teresa?
Oh my goodness. I would, I think I would most like to be remembered as a leader who cared enough to make a difference.
Yes, I think that's very fitting for everything that you've talked about today, because that's the real sense that I get when you share your story. You have a very strong sense of purpose, and that comes through. And I think, I love that message. Thank you so much, Teresa, for sharing your story today and for your honesty. I think we're very privileged. I feel very privileged to have listened to your story and to have benefited from sharing your experiences, because I know, as we touched on, sometimes, you know, we shy away from that honesty for fear of what people might think. And it's hugely important that we talk about the reality of being a nurse and help other people realize that they're not on their own. There are other people who've been through this. So I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your personal experiences, as well as some great conversations around. I feel enthused and energized. I always do after I talk to you. I just love, you know, the way that kind of the direction you're taking and the passion that you share about this. So thank you so much for your interview today.
Oh my gosh. Same to you. I always enjoy talking with you, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Teresa.